This is David Kaplan on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Cap and Company podcast, presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Cap and Company. Follow at the Capman on Twitter.
Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Chris Bleck, Jesse Rogers, sing in for David Kaplan today here on Cap and Company on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Watch us on Twitch, the channel ESPN 1000 Chicago. You can also join the conversation at 312-332-3776. Scott in Highland Park, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Scott?
Hey, how you doing? So listen, I want to talk about Jordan. Was he a bad winner? And I want to talk about Karl Malone real quick. You know what? Jordan wanted to put people down and keep them down. It's never changed his entire career. And Karl Malone is a great competitor. Probably my favorite power forward of all time. A matchup nightmare. So he's bitter about it. So what? Did he go on that bus and congratulate Jordan? Yeah, he did. So that's Karl being Karl. I get a little tired of people wanting these guys to do the politically correct thing. Let them be themselves. They're great competitors, and I'm in awe of both of them. Of course, I'm in awe of Jordan. And Horace Grant, look at your checkbook next time and thank Michael Jordan. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Scott. Well,
but that's fine. But I just don't get why today or recently when E60 asked Karl Malone, Michael Jordan, why not just give the normal – ah, great player, man. We had some battles. I mean, why is that so hard to do? He did go on the bus and congratulate him. So what's wrong with saying similar now? I just didn't get that.
Yeah, and Jesse's referring to this. Here's the promo piece from E60 on a sit-down they had with Karl Malone. Here's the clip.
So when I say the name Michael Jordan, what comes to mind?
Michael Jordan. Well, what else I need to say? Thank you. Go ahead.
So talk to me about the Game 6 Finals in Utah when he stole the ball.
Why do I have to? But I tell you this, I'm all man, and I accept the responsibility for not winning one, and we was there. We just happened to be playing the Chicago Bulls, which wasn't just Michael Jordan, by the way. And I have the utmost respect for Michael, but I never thought I was playing Michael Jordan. I was playing the Chicago Bulls. But let's not, you know, everybody say this person was a bad man and all that. Well, yes, I give them respect. But I got a set up. I'm a man. And I was a bad son of a bitch too. So that's how I look at that. And that's who I am. Maybe in my older years, I can call it that bluntly, but I'm just calling it like I see it.
That's Karl Malone to E60, Jess.
I'm going to repeat what I said, Chris. Yeah. I have no idea what he's trying to say. I really don't. Unless it's just pure jealousy, I have no idea what he's saying.
He just thinks he's as good as Michael. He stole two MVPs from him, but he's not happy with that because he didn't win the title. I mean, let's call it what it is. Okay. You go back in history. Was Malone the MVP? Probably not. The media got sick of the Jordan story. That's the way it was. Same thing happened to Kobe in 06, right? Kobe was the best player in the league. Steve Nash wins the MVP because the story was better. People loved that Utah story. Finally, the two guys run their pick and roll. The one guy with his little shorts, the other guy with the great big muscles. Finally, they're going to dethrone Michael Jordan. I mean, if you watch the games from 98, those finals games, I mean, Bob Costas wanted the Jazz to win those games. The national media wanted the Jazz to unseat the Chicago Bulls. So I'm sure Malone still thinks he's better than Jordan.
I just don't see what the big deal is all this time later. Like, who won the MVP?
Get over it, right?
Who cares? I mean, just like life moves on. MVP is just a thing. You know what I mean? He's like, my God, just give an interview. And I don't know. I mean, that's why you feel like there's something deeper going on. Was he this sore winner that, you know, but it didn't seem like it. You know, he congratulated Bird or whatever. They hugged in that moment. So I don't know.
Maybe Malone wants his own 30 for 30. I'm sure ESPN could set that up. I'm sure they could dig really into the full story arc of a Karl Malone. Bleck and Rogers sing in for David Kaplan here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Jesse, you have a story about a part-time gig. You're working on the side. You used to work on the side. What's this about?
It's funny. I'm gonna this is not name dropping, but it's some version of it. When you mentioned Costas wanted the Jazz to win, I was about to say I wouldn't know because I was at all the games. I mean, I never got to hear what he had to say, except, and this leads me to my story, except there was a handful of games in the finals that I had a little side gig, freelance gig. So I was already at the United Center or on the road with the team. You know, we were at the game, and I was offered to help out in the TV truck. So this would be the only time that I heard the broadcast.
Okay.
So I'm offered to help out in the TV truck. Anybody, you know, that knows anything about television production, the truck is located outside the building. You go in there. It's like a mini studio with tons of screens, and the director and the producer is in there. It's so cool to watch, right? You know, take shot three, take shot four, get Jordan, do this, you know. So my job, and I'm like 23, 24 years old, my job was to sit at near one of the monitors, or two monitors, actually. And you know the 24-second shot clock where it's located above each basket?
Yeah.
So there's a camera on each 24-second shot clock, just focused on them. On the shot clock the whole game. One camera on one side, one camera on the other side, just zoomed in. So the director can put the countdown on the screen, right? You see that on the screen even today. So my job was to watch those cameras and watch the shot clock on each side. And when it got down to seven, I hit a red button. It's right next to me. I'd hit a red button, and it would appear on the screen. Seven, wow. Six, five, 4, 3. That was my whole job.
Right.
So, okay, first couple times it did it early, fine. But after that, the game, I'm watching Jordan. The game.
Oh,
like
no.
I'm watching the games, and they're so competitive and so getting caught up. And so like 4 or 5 times it's going down 7, 6, 5, and the director's yelling, shot clock, shot clock, shot clock. And like 2 seconds left, I'm hitting it. And so I don't think technically I was fired because it was a freelance gig, but
you weren't asked
the
back.
First couple finals that I wasn't asked back,
right?
I did it like 4 or 5 times and I wasn't asked back in future years. It wasn't like mid finals they didn't ask me back, it was like the next year. But so maybe they got some other guy that's a little bit more attentive. But that was my gig. Think about that gig. You're just staring at the shot clock and when it's 7, but you can't really watch the game,
right?
So no wonder I screwed it up,
Yeah, because you have to be focused on a specific thing that's taking place. You can't actually follow what's happening throughout the game,
right?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it was a very cool job. It was kind of funny. And
hey, Rogers, hit the button. What are you doing, Rogers?
And, of course, I taped the game back home. And, like, of all things to be watching for, like,
Did you critique your work?
My girlfriend at the time or something. That's me, the shot clock. I hit it.
I hit that button. Look, the red dot.
Or rather, I didn't hit it. It's like 3, 2. Where's the shot clock? Oh, it's so funny.
It's like when you watch a football game and you don't see the down and yardage on there. And you're like, wait, what happened? And you think back, like, oh, this is how it used to be. And you're like, oh, the guy must have just missed that one play. The 3rd and 17. He forgot to put it up on the screen.
So funny.
Let's go to Lewis in Hyde Park. Lewis, you're on ESPN 1000. Lewis?
Hello?
Hey, Lewis. What's up, man?
Hey, what's up, man? How you guys doing?
We're great. What do you have?
I just want to say right quick, and I don't want to take up too much time. I just want to say, I don't know if you guys heard about the whole pizza story, the actual guy who made the pizza for Michael Jordan, who worked at Pizza Hut, because when he ordered the pizza, he called Pizza Hut and he got the pizza from there.
Yeah.
He said that everything about that story in the documentary is a complete lie. He stated that he personally made the pizza himself because he didn't want anyone tampering with the pizza. And secondly, he delivered it with another person. So it was only 2 guys. It wasn't 5 or 6 odd, strange guys standing out the room or whatsoever. He also stated when he got to the floor that the floor was full of smoke, cigar smoke. When he got to the room, he said Jordan didn't have a shirt on. He was smoking a cigar, and the room was totally full of smoke. So my whole focal point of that is just like, why does Michael Jordan and David Falk, why do they need to lie? Why do they need to make up something? It's kind of like this is another stage routine for him to be shown in a certain light, just like with the LeBradford Smith situation where he lied about that. and other things. So my whole thing is, how can you really trust that documentary? And how can you really trust Jordan in that sense? And it's kind of it's really disappointing.
Are we talking about? They lied about just how many people delivered the pizza, or that
no, he lied about the food poisoning, because the guy said he made the pizza personally himself. It wasn't poison. And then he lied about how many people was out of the room, as if it was a shady situation, those guys could have tampered with it, when it was just two people. It was like he built that up to make it into some type of conspiracy when it wasn't.
I felt like that was, Chris, what do you think? I felt like Thanks, that Lewis. Was a little tongue-in-cheek. Like, I don't know for sure they were saying it was poisoned, but they feel like it did cause his sickness. I get that, but I know they were sort of saying it. Did you take away, or definitively they thought it was the pizza was poisoned?
It was certainly questioned.
It was intimated.
I don't think they accused them of poisoning Michael.
Right.
But listen, Like many of us, I mean, you eat something the next day, it doesn't agree with you. It's possible, but I don't know if you get that sick from it. If you have food poisoning, sure, you certainly could. But Jess, it seems like we have to investigate. I mean, this pizza guy coming out, 25 years later? where's this guy been this entire time? You're telling me it just dawned on him now? To come forward and say, Pizza King. I'm the one that made the pizza that got Jordan sick. And my craft, my skills were good enough that I delivered a great pie to Michael. Something else is up.
Well, no one was questioning it previous to this documentary, really.
Why? Well, I mean, people questioned it for years.
Well, no, let me tell you something. I think there's some revisionist history. We learned back in the day that it was food poisoning early on, or they thought it was food poisoning early on. George Kohler is Michael's driver, who was in the documentary. And I know in the days afterwards, when it all kind of started to shake out, George, I think, was telling us, I believe it was George, that Michael ate something the night before. It was like not a big secret, I don't think.
Right.
This is how stories go after 20 years, but I remember in days afterwards George telling us, I think it's this pizza he had last night.
I don't know, Jess. This seems like one of those cold cases you find on TV.
Forensic files.
Yeah. Do we have the forensics of the pizza oven, the products that came into the restaurant that day? Did anyone else get sick? I mean, about contact tracing now. Did we figure it? Can we go back? Who else did this pizza maker come in contact with at the time before he delivered the pie?
Yeah, I mean, I guess he could have had the 24-hour bug, right? He wakes up with a little bug, and it affects him that day. But having pizza in the middle of the night, in the middle, of Utah, at a place you don't know, I mean, that makes sense. That's possible that he had a bad pizza, right? Not necessarily purposely poisoned, but just a bad ingredients or whatever, not fresh or whatever.
I'm a little skeptical about this pizza maker just coming forward now. We might have to investigate this, Jess. I'm not sold. He's just coming out now?
I guess so. Hey, by the way, I've got some bits over.
Bits over. Moving on. Go ahead.
I got some here. Wait a minute. To your bit?
Yeah?
Wait.
Oh, are you going to come back with your own sound effects?
I got sound effects.
Wait, hold on. We're 2 hours and 13 minutes into the show, and now you're telling us you have your own sound effects?
Yeah, I'm going to play a couple for you. Here you go.
Wait.
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm on with Hood tomorrow. I'm going to use that one for sure. Here's another one. Oh, that works for our Pizzagate. That's a good one. Let's see this one. For any of your one-liners, I could have used that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's for most of my arguments. People are...
What is that, crickets?
There you go. That's our audience for now on.
What'd you go to, like generic soundlog catalog.com or something?
It's I have this board, this Rodecaster board, that actually my stepson uses for podcasting, Andrew, and I stole it from him to use, and it's got these sound effects already built in.
All right. People want to talk about the Pizzagate, Jess.
Oh, sorry. Go on.
On your little soundboard there, do you have something for us going to commercial break?
That's all I have.
No. I'm talking about this one.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Cap and Company. See what Sparkles is up to on Twitch.
Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago today. Cap and Company.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Jesse Rogers singing for David Kaplan today here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Jesse, people are tweeting us. We have one from Anthony at Chris Bleck and at Jesse Rogers ESPN. Hey, man, keep this low. I'm actually the guy that made the pizza. I was born in 1983, so I wasn't very experienced. Just to keep this on the low, don't want anyone to find out. Vinny also tweets us, I have a confession. I'm the one that made the pizza that night. Sounds like, Jess, we need to investigate this a little bit more. The individual who came out the last couple days saying he's the guy that made the pizza. There are multiples out there saying they made the pizza that got Michael Jordan sick.
It's a good gate. Pizza gate. Like, that's a good one. Yes. I like pizza gate. That just works. Everybody gets it. We need the real pizza delivery man to stand up is what we need. We need proof.
I mean, I just feel like Dateline needs E60. Someone needs to actually go forensic file this. You know, cold case shows are all the rage on Netflix. You binge through them like they're Tic Tacs, right? Like, that's all I watch. It's all my wife and I watch are these cold cases recovered and all this stuff, the DNA evidence, cell phone tracking, all this information. Back in 98, you didn't have that.
No, but you have.
But I'm sure records. There are forms on the deliveries of what was delivered to that restaurant that day. Did
so
anyone else get sick?
Who was working that night? You could probably figure that out. Then at that point, who delivered it? I'm not sure there'd be evidence to say that, but it can't be more than a few people that were working that night, right?
Well, if you talk to the people that work at the hotel, they have to know who's coming into the hotel, right?
Right, but they won't know my name necessarily.
Perhaps not, but we could probably pin down the specific moment. Let's go to Steve in Elmhurst. You're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Steve?
Hey, guys. You know, this is just hilarious to me. You know, you got a guy who's competing for a championship, and he's got this singular focus at all times pretty much. And yet he's going to, you know, go out and, you know, have a night on the town or who knows what people are thinking it was going on. And oh, by the way, you're going to have to also believe that they ordered the pizza under Michael Jordan's name. That's why the guy made the pizza himself, because he knew it was for Michael Jordan, because they were dumb enough to use Michael Jordan's name when ordering the pizza. And then you also have to believe that Dolores Jordan, Tim Grover, George Kohler, and Michael Jordan all lied about it. Now, does that make more sense, or does it make more sense that this is just some pizza clown that's trying to make a name for himself?
Thank you, Steve. Jesse, your thoughts on the pizza clown?
Well, the thing that's believable, I don't have any thoughts on the pizza clown, but the thing that's believable, though, is the scenario where they had to track down and order pizza, because I remember being in Utah for the finals 2 years in a row. The thing, and that's the only time I've ever been in Salt Lake, is that place closed down early. I'm talking, you couldn't get a drink, certainly a drink, because we know why, you know, after like 9 o'clock, and certainly not on Sundays and all that stuff. I mean, that town closed down early. So the part about them trying to find something that's open or stay open or whatever, and that's probably why they used Michael's name, that all makes sense to me. Completely, 100% makes sense to me. No room service, that makes sense to me. It just was a different animal in that town back then. So I think they were telling the truth all the way through, other than maybe it was two guys and not five at the door. That sounds like an exaggeration.
Gary McHenry, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Gary?
Hey, I got a theory on the Jordan pizza thing.
Oh, yes, give it to us.
I'm thinking there was a second pizza guy out on the grassy knoll. And maybe he put something from the grassy knoll into Jordan's pizza.
Thank you for the call, Gary. Was there someone in the hallway holding an umbrella? Jesse, are you aware of the umbrella theory?
Was it the mailman delivering the pizza, if you know what I mean? Is that
right?
Why he's all bitter?
Yeah.
No, what's the umbrella
what you
theory?
Did there. Do you have your little drum roll thing for that joke?
Yeah, here. There you go.
Well played.
Thank you.
You know Umbrella Man, right?
No, I don't know Umbrella
Man. It's a guy that's standing on the grassy knoll that day There's one individual on the film who's standing there with an umbrella. It was a sunny day. There's one person in the film, in the shot of the JFK assassination, that's standing on the grassy knoll with an umbrella. It's the Umbrella Man theory.
I just know about the second spitter. That's the one I know about.
That's Seinfeld, right?
Right, yes.
Eric in Iowa City, you're on ESPN 1000.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on the Karl Malone thing. I think we got to kind of look at this through his eyes. I mean, he's considered the best power forward in history, or at least one of the two with him and Duncan. The guy could never get over the hump, never win a title, even though he was considered a winner because of how successful those Jazz teams were. They went to the playoffs every year. He even came out of retirement to go play for the Lakers just to try to get a ring, and he never got one. And I think that's where some of this maybe – he's a competitor. I think maybe that's where some of this bitter stuff comes from with his comments.
I guess so. But, man, you're in the Hall of Fame. You're one of the top 50 of all time. You're – plenty of accolades. Okay, there was a team in your way, like every opponent in the 90s of the Bulls. So, I don't know, 20 years later, you're still bitter about it. Seems weird to me, but I'm not in his shoes.
Tom in Bridgeport, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Tom?
Hey, what's up, guys? I just want to bring up the fact that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be the pizza place employees that did anything to the pizza. You know, I know if I'm a 20-something-year-old kid working at a hotel, every one of my friends are going to know, hey, the Bulls are here. And you never know. You never know who you're going to – your friends could have been hanging out in their car, in the parking lot. Not that they were necessarily going to do anything to pizza, you know, at that moment or preemptive. But in that moment, they might have been like, oh, let's put the whatever on there. I mean, you never know. You just – you're never going to know. But you can't rule out – I mean, you can't just say it was the pizza place. It could easily be a hotel employee, janitor, who, anybody.
Ooh, see, they're adding to the mix.
The conspiracy. Yes. It's evolving, this conspiracy.
Brian on the north side, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
No problem.
I listened to the interview with this guy. I believe his name was Craig Fite.
Yeah.
And he claims that there were only three or four people on duty at that time. It was a Pizza Hut. The Pizza Hut's no longer there. And it's been torn down and something else has been put there or whatever. But at the time, he said that this guy, he said, was a Bulls fan. And he said he even named his son after Michael Jordan. And he said he's the one who made the pizza, and he did it because he didn't want anybody to screw with it. And he said that they did not know that it was for Michael Jordan. They just assumed that it was for the players, because they knew the Bulls were in town, but it didn't have a specific name on it. Or if the name, it was a funny name. It wasn't like for Michael Jordan. So he delivered it to the second floor. It was him and another guy. And they went in, and Jordan was at a table. They gave him the pizza, and they left, and that was it.
I didn't hear the interview. Did he think that the pizza caused his sickness? Does he believe that?
No, he says it's BS. And he also said that one of the guys who's on the video, the trainer, said there was no way that there was five guys there. He said, we only had two guys, and we were both wearing uniforms, he said. Because he had a driver.
Ah, pizza uniforms, yeah.
Yeah, pizza.
The man is in uniform, Jess.
Well, I mean, what's funny is let's say it was the pizza, and he didn't poison him. But here's a guy that made it personally and used bad ingredients, if it was the pizza. You know what I mean? Like, you would think he'd make sure he had fresh ingredients and all that. He wants to make the best possible pizza for Jordan. He ends up getting him sick. Maybe.
I
don't know for sure.
Find it a little suspect. I named my kid after him. I'm such a big fan. But we tore down the pizza establishment that was there.
Right?
Like, I mean, you watch enough of these shows, Jess, and you see that the building where something took place doesn't exist.
Let me find my right sound effect for your conspiracy.
Okay.
Yeah, that one.
Listen, I'm all about conspiracy theories, so I'm fine with it. I think it's a whole lot of fun. And by the way, I can trump your conspiracy theory sound effect with one of my own.
Oh, you got a better one. Yeah, I only got the...
That's what I do.
Yeah. We have competing boards here.
It's the first time in ESPN 1000 history.
When you have a new toy, right, Chris?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Can we continue talking about this with Ryan McGuffie from NBC Sports Chicago? He has a new podcast coming out about Jordan before he came back in 95 and 94 and how he got to that point. It's an I'm Back podcast. We'll talk about that, but let's get his opinion on this Pizzagate because clearly people want to talk about it. Let's do that next.
You're listening to Cap'n Company on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Cap'n Company. Follow us on the gram at Cap'n Co. And ESPN underscore Chicago.
Chicago's home for sports.
ESPN 1000.
Here's another angle to consider, Jess. We're talking about Pizzagate with Michael Jordan, the NBA Finals, 1997, before the flu game. Adam on Twitter tweets us asking the question, what did Jordan have for lunch that day? We're only pointing to the late night pizza meal. What else did he have that day? Is that something we have to look into while we investigate this important storyline?
Right. We have to contact and trace, right? Did he eat lunch alone? Did someone else have it with him? Did they get sick? Not even if it, maybe it wasn't a player, you know, we'd have to really go back and do all that.
Yeah. What if it was like Del Taco for lunch and then we're blaming the pizza guy? Cause what Del Taco is like a West Coast taco chain, right?
You know, the taco guy call up, I served him tacos. I served him pizza. I gave him his eggs in the morning. Got him sick?
Let's ask Ryan McGuffie from NBC Sports Chicago. He has a new podcast being released by NBC Sports Chicago called Sports Uncovered. They're going to look into the backstory of Jordan returning in 95 to basketball and when he came back. But first, Ryan, as we bring you into the conversation, we've been talking about Pizzagate. How do you think this went down? Because Jesse and I have been hearing a bunch of different theories from our listeners about how this happened and how many pizza guys there actually are. Do you believe that the story that was told on The Last Dance is true?
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. I do know this. I certainly appreciate the people that are coming. I mean, the pizza guy is now making the rounds for interviews. I mean, every single person that could possibly capitalize off of this. Maybe I should just say I was the guy at Del Taco in Utah that day. Maybe that's the hook. Maybe I served him a wet burrito. And Jordan had that for lunch. It really wasn't the pizza that he spit on the night before. Man, what a mess. Yeah, five pizza guys sounds. I mean, I don't know how if five pizza guys show up at the hotel.
It's a little bit of exaggeration.
I'd say so. Because if any of that happened to the three of us, wouldn't we all kind of go, you know, I think I'm good here.
Right.
So.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. So, Ryan, on the new podcast, you guys go behind the scenes, and you have a story about MJ practicing against the Warriors to get ready to come back to the NBA.
Yeah, it's a big hook. And this is not just an NBC Sports Chicago. This is actually NBC Sports National. So this is a national NBC sports project, Sports Uncovered. You're going to have different podcasts drop every Thursday starting next week. And it does start with ours. I'm Back. We all know about the facts and, you know, 25 years ago and what the impact of that facts was. I wanted to dive deeper. Obviously we aired a half hour special on it on March 19th, which was the 25th anniversary, but this goes way deeper. It's an hour long podcast, and there was some blips written back in 94, 95 when Jordan did come back that leaked out that he may have practiced with one or two teams. And so I went down that rabbit hole, but most importantly is we're interviewing Tim Hardaway, and I wanted to interview guys, whether they were teammates, players in the league, star players in the league, about the impact of Jordan coming back. And Tim Hardaway, halfway through the interview, says, listen, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this. But he actually practiced with us before practicing with the Bulls. Because my question was directed about that, you know, the week leading up to the comeback at the Bertel Center and everybody being crazy and stuff like that and just being the national story. And I said, whoa, 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 excuse me? Like, what are you talking about? And he goes into this detail about he was friends with Rod Higgins, and Rod Higgins' career had just ended, and then he went into the front office. And at the Hart was the first guy to kind of give us the story. So after we got done with the interview, I was kind of like, wait a minute, like, really? And so I asked him Hardaway some questions off camera afterwards, and I was like, there's only one way to get the, and Jesse, you know this, there's only one way to make this story true, and it's to kind of keep going down. We need somebody else to validate this story.
Right.
So he gives the name Rod Higgins, so from there we got to find Rod Higgins. And we went to Atlanta and talked to Rod Higgins, communicated with him in advance, telling him exactly why we were trying to go get this story. He knew all about the practices and what exactly I was asking for. He not only doubled down, he opened up and goes really into detail about the specifics of what happened. He starts name dropping, brings Chris Mullin into the mix. We take that info, go to Chris Mullin, and everybody doubled down for the guy after that. And it's a good 15 to 20 minute chunk of this podcast.
Wow. That's interesting.
Huh. Yeah.
What did you make of it? What do you make of it all?
So he did it. It happened late fall, like right around Thanksgiving time in November of 94. I don't want to give too much of it, but I'll give, there's some things that are definitely hooks here. He was friends with Rod Higgins. They were teammates with the Bulls when Jordan first was drafted by the Bulls. They kept that friendship throughout. Rod Higgins had just started his coaching career with Don Nelson. And so he was out in California. Michael was out in California and calls. This is my favorite part. He calls Rod Higgins. So this is after the baseball season, obviously. This is mid-November, whatever. And calls Rod Higgins is like, hey, I'm out here. Can I come practice with you guys? And Higgins is like, hey, MJ, I'm pretty sure that's not how it works. Like, you can't just be like, I'm going to come practice with you guys in season for a team. You're retired. You're Michael Jordan. And Higgins basically was like, well, I'm your buddy. I'll call Don Nelson. And Don Nelson was like, hell yeah, let's do this. And back then, obviously, there's no Twitter. There's no social media or anything. No camera phones, no smartphones. So they're able to kind of just close practice and not have to leak this story to the media because they made it a close practice. And no one really thought much of it. The Warriors were terrible. They were going through a real – I think Don Nelson ended up getting fired later that season. So Mullin was hurt. You had kind of the debut of – or not the debut, but Sprewell was kind of on the up as like the next big thing. And so Jordan wanted to kind of test his game against some of these guys that were supposed to be the next hit. And it kind of goes from there.
Ryan McGuffrey from NBC Sports Chicago joining us, talking about Michael Jordan when he came back to basketball after playing baseball. And Ryan, the one thing that I was going to follow up on Latrell Sprewell, because there is a connection in when we fast forward to the 99 season where Latrell Sprewell finds his way on the Knicks, that team that goes to the finals. There was talk that like Latrell Sprewell was like the next up and coming guy, one of those guys who can maybe unseat and take over when the Bulls, their dynasty was over. So like, what did people say about that back and forth between Sprewell and Jordan at that time?
What they said was that Latrell Sprewell was far from Michael Jordan. I mean, that's basically,
well, yeah.
And it was proven on the court that day. Well, I should say days. It was a series of days. It wasn't just one practice. And that Latrell, that Jordan did want to gauge himself if he was going to come back. At least it's clear that, you know, he didn't just pop into the Burnell Center on March 1st because of the Major League Baseball strike. I do think, and this, we go into the podcast too about the baseball stuff and whether or not, you know, if he stays, whether there was a strike or not, and The Last Dance goes into it too. I actually kind of thought, to be honest with you, I thought The Last Dance was going to like go down this rabbit hole that I went down. I'm like, wow, this could be tough. And it kind of just fast forwarded to like the Burrow Center stuff. And mm-hmm. So it made me really happy that, okay, like here's this huge nugget, the stone that was unturned about the Warriors and how that Michael just, like, how did that happen? How did nobody talk to these guys, and how did they keep it secret for 25 years? I don't know. But, you know, as we've learned, and Jesse, again, you know this, like, talking to guys, listen, after 25, and when Tim Hardaway said, you know, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, I just said, it's been 25 years. I mean, statute of limitations. Like, we're good. Like, you're not going to get in trouble at this point for saying it. And quite frankly, you've already said it by saying that. So, guys were happy to talk about it. And the Sprewell thing, I think, and Tim Grover goes into it as well. He didn't know about the practices, but he gives us this thought, like kind of why Michael needed to do it, and the thought that why Jordan would do something like that. For a lot of people, it would seem like you kind of hang like a red flag, like, wait, what's going on here? And Grover gives you a really good, kind of takes you inside the head of Michael Jordan as to why that he needed to do that.
This is with Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago. Let's quickly pivot to baseball. Are you all ready to go full on White Sox if they return? Are you guys just chomping at the bit to cover your team there?
Oh yeah, I mean I'm sure you are too. I think we're all at this point. I've done enough e-learning and staying at home and ready to go. I mean. We all need something to turn to. Like I was the KBO, like excited me for like two innings, and then I'm like, okay, this is like I saw Tyler Saladino for 4 years. That was like I'm good. I need some baseball, and not just that. We need baseball, and I think we need sports, and I think hopefully the league's baseball. I don't know, Jesse. Like it's a little frustrating to kind of the whether or not it's a chess match or negotiation that's going through, but it doesn't make anybody look very good right now with the way it's being handled. I hope they can see through it and we can get to July 4th weekend. I mean, it would be so awesome that July 4th weekend we could start baseball again. It just feels like that's the perfect, like, that's Americana at its finest right there.
Now, you mentioned the KBO and, you know, only watched a couple innings, but we at least get a taste of it without fans. I'm curious if we're going to be sorely disappointed in how this goes down. Like, how much are we going to miss the crowd? Just the crowd noise, just the crowd participation is going to take away from the game. Like we couldn't believe, or is it no big deal? They're still competing. What do you think?
No, I think for sure. Like, if the Cubs and White Sox are going to play with no fans, I mean that whole series is made up on the fan buzz and the anticipation. I mean, so look, like 15 years ago, that series, the buzz and the buildup to that series was probably more impactful and important then than it is now. So many guys are friends with each other. It's going to be really weird. It's almost going to be like an inter-squad game on the backfield in Mesa or Glendale. And the only atmosphere or buzz that you're going to be able to get is at home. And maybe at that point you can have a buddy or two over and watch the game and talk some trash to each other. But I don't know. It's going to be – the ratings are going to be extremely high. Like, baseball has a real opportunity to capitalize if they do things right, because you're going to have a lot of people watching your sport that you maybe either had tuned out or people have never tuned in. So that's the part where I'm curious as to how this is going to go. But the fan thing is going to be really weird for all of us, and it's just unfortunate that all of us can't – I mean, even those of us who like – you know, who do cover the game for a living, sometimes it's fun just to, like – let your guard down, go to a game with a buddy and have a hot dog and a beer, and it's going to just be tough not to do that this year.
Ryan, where can we find the podcast, and when is it dropping?
It drops next Thursday. It is under Sports Uncovered, under NBC Sports. Listen, click, subscribe, wherever you listen to the podcast. Subscribe is a big key because, obviously, as you guys know with podcasts, like the next one just drops and falls in your lap, and it just goes right in your queue. Yeah. But I'm back, Michael Jordan. The timing of it, sometimes you luck out. We lucked out with the Last Dance stuff. Again, 15 to 20 minutes, deep dive into Michael Jordan as a Golden State Warrior for the first time that we're really hearing kind of the details of that whole thing. And it really kind of uncovers the rest of how the facts and everything went from there. And Michael Jordan kind of led Michael Jordan and the Bulls kind of got to that Last Dance.
Thank you, Ryan. We appreciate it.
Always good to talk to you guys. Stay safe.
That's Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago. Pretty cool because, Jess, we knew the story from the Berto Center, and we knew the way that Jordan was kind of testing those around the league to see if he could still bring it, and that's a cool story.
Well, but even stranger if he was thinking about going back to that team. But obviously, they stunk back then. And I think we're all old enough to remember how bad the Warriors were. It wasn't that long ago.
They were bad for 30 years. Yeah, absolutely.
What if he was coming back to the Warriors? That would have been quite the story.
Crazy. That's Jesse Rogers. I'm Chris Black. Coming up next, live sports have returned. Are you watching?
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000.
This hour of Cap and Company is brought to you by Weed Man. Don't let mosquitoes take a bite out of your summer. Go to WeedManUSA.com today. Thank you to Erica Strosky and to Randy Merkin for producing today's show. Thank you to from Bill Barnwell and Ryan McGuffey for joining the show. If you want to listen to the podcast of Bill Barnwell, check it out on the Cap and Company page on the ESPN Chicago app. Jesse, in 10 minutes, Carmen and Yurko will join us here in studio, and I'm going to ask Yurko about Darlington last night because I was watching live sports. I know we're waiting for baseball, basketball, and football to get started up and for football in the fall, but there are live sports taking place. I enjoyed watching NASCAR the last two races. I'm into it.
I didn't watch it so much, but I have been watching UFC.
There you go.
Jacksonville.
Yeah.
And that's been interesting so far. Some big matches. Couple weeks ago, and even last day, they had a Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday card. That's pretty good in the span of 8 days. Three cards in Jacksonville. It was all interesting. And this weekend, to me, will be the first appointment TV. Like, I watch UFC because my son liked it. I sat down. But this I'll just call it Skins game. I don't know what you want to call it. Mickelson and Brady versus Manning and Tiger. I think that's appointment TV, don't you?
Tiger and Mickelson, yeah. I'm not as into the non-golfers playing the golf.
But it's Brady and Manning, Black. Come on.
Oh, okay. Cool. I'd rather have you seen them on Peyton's story where he talks to Brady? Like, I'll watch that. Did you see that episode?
I did.
Peyton's TV show? Like, that's great. I don't need them to play golf against each other. What about other golfers? Like, here's my question to you, Jess.
Yeah.
NASCAR is up and running, right? Where's the PGA Tour? I know that they have it in place.
What's
gonna
coming
get
in June?
Well, I get it, but what's taking so long? UFC, NASCAR. I mean, come on.
They scheduled it a month ago.
You can do this Skins game with Mickelson, Tiger, and two football players, but you can't get the tour going?
Well, they just did a different kind of Skins with golfers, only golfers last week.
So why couldn't they play in an actual tournament? Well, what are we wasting our time for?
God forbid we watch two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time compete in a different sport with two of the greatest golfers of all time.
I mean,
sorry that doesn't interest Chris Black, but it interests me, and I bet it interests Yurko.
Well, okay, but what's the interest level? Is it only interesting you because there's nothing else to do?
Yes.
Like, I'll binge watch something on Netflix over that. That's what I'm saying. Is like, come on, give me something real. I can sink my teeth into a real NASCAR race, a real UFC fight.
Well, you gotta, first of all, a PGA Tour date, which I don't.
Well, you're just a hater, Jess. I mean, what's wrong? Rubbing is racing. Let's go.
Yeah, well,
Did you agree with Kyle Busch putting Chase Young into the wall yesterday? Clipping him on the backside?
We have 5 minutes. Do we have time for any calls? What would you rather watch? The Mickelson, Tiger, Brady, Manning thing this weekend or last night's Darlington?
Well, I'm giving you analysis on the race, and you just ignored it. You just went right by
it. For good reason. For good reason.
Okay.
It's NASCAR.
Can I bring something else to the table in the final couple minutes here before Carmen and Yurko? Did you see this story that NASA scientists have detected evidence of a parallel universe where time runs backwards?
I saw the headline.
Did you see this?
And I moved right past it.
Oh, really? This doesn't interest you?
Well, I mean, if it was real, it'd interest me, but I just.
What do you mean it's real? NASA is not real now?
I think their discovery is not real.
Wow, you're going against information and science. NASA scientists working on an experiment in Antarctica have detected evidence of a parallel universe where the rules of physics are the opposite of our own. That doesn't interest you? You think that's fake? It suggests that the findings imply that these particles in the research are actually traveling backwards in time, suggesting there's evidence of a parallel universe, Jesse. I think this is big information. The simplest explanation from the piece I'm reading from the New York Post of the phenomenon is that the moment that the Big Bang happened 13.8 billion years ago, two universes were formed, ours and one from the perspective of the complete opposite, running in reverse in time going backwards. Do you know the possibilities of this? If we can find that universe and go into it and see what's taking place, the complete opposite of our lives right now, but going back in time?
I think this plot line was in Stranger Things last season. Perhaps the upside down, as they like to call it.
Yeah, it's that. It's also elements of Back to the Future in there, too. Because, like, if you go back and say we go into that parallel universe, what takes place to our universe if we start disrupting that one? See what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. I would love to know if it's real.
Jesse, in this parallel universe,
yeah,
you're growing hair, not losing hair.
Yeah.
Why do you not, like, this is great.
You're not a reporter. You're doing something else. What's the complete opposite of a Cubs beat reporter?
Listen, not growing hair in the last 3 months has been a very, very good thing. We finally got our revenge, us bald guys. We got our revenge because all I hear about is everybody complaining about the hair. I have no such problem.
Real nice. You're taking COVID-19 as the revenge of the bald guy?
Yes,
real nice, Jess. Real nice.
I am.
What would you be doing if this universe was going the complete opposite and back in time?
Yeah, this sounds like that Seinfeld episode where Costanza, what is the complete opposite of chicken salad? It was salmon or something, right? What is the opposite of covering baseball? I don't know. You tell me.
Well, you wouldn't be covering something, doing? Right? Yeah, I think you'd be a chef, right?
Right.
Like, that's the opposite. Exactly. You'd be a chef for, oh no. In the other universe, is Jesse the pizza guy who takes the pizza to Jordan? Oh no. But it's not Jordan. It's the complete opposite.
Right. Wow. It's Bill Weddington. No, I don't know.
To Weddington's a star. Carmen and Yurko in 2 minutes.
You're listening to Cap and Company on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.